Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome and thank you. Thank you for your support.
Of course.
Welcome and thank you.
Yes.
We're doing this in the evening, which is not normal.
No.
So it's got a slightly eveningy vibe.
Night has fallen, the stars are sparkling.
Yeah.
And I've just eaten an orange-flavoured club biscuit.
Have you?
Oh, really? Nice. That's retro. Yeah.
Straight from the fridge.
Straight from my childhood.
Yeah. Straight from the past.
They're a lovely little treat. I fully approve of that. The only thing I struggle with is that they don't feel big enough anymore.
No, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
But that's partly why I'm on them, as a way of having a sweet treat, making myself feel good.
But exercising restraint.
Yeah.
I feel like it just gets me started. It just gets me more a slavering.
And then it's the penguins, the blue ribbons. Yeah. Isn't it? Then all the retro trucks come out.
My archived spiral bars.
Yes, you've still got them, haven't you?
They're still in a glass case.
They're every year, because they're different.
When the hammer comes
out,
the hammer comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I did this week on that kind of topic?
Cool. Topic the chocolate bar or topic the subject?
Topic the subject. I thought, right, I'm going to the shops. I'm not going to buy any sweet treats of any sort.
So I'm going to buy my own weight in ham.
Well, I thought I'll lean even more heavily into yogurt, which is already a kind of quite foundational part of my diet.
Mm.
But I'll just hit yogurt every time I want anything.
Okay.
Yogurt, hit a yogurt, okay?
Yeah.
What do you think of the Actimel? I've actually, for the first, well, no, not for the first time in a long time, years, I'd say a decade, I've got a fridge full of Actimel.
I don't even know what that is. Is that one of those like Yakult style mini?
It's a lifestyle yogurt, yeah. It's
yeah.
It's
friendly
a sort of
bacteria gang, yeah, isn't it?
It's a handheld. It's like a sort of handheld. It's like sort of it's your backup yogurt that you keep in your sock, sort of thing. You know, if you're separated from your main yogurt,
With a bit of cyanide in it,
a little bit of cyanide in it.
If you're captured, down it goes.
Yeah.
Or it might be bought for you if someone you live with thinks that you're a sort of problem guffer or something like that.
If you've got particularly toxic farts.
Would it be anti-guff yogurt or guff
I think that's what a lot of people are hoping, but I don't know I couldn't tell you what the guff evidence is.
I'd imagine it would make the ground more fertile in some way.
I want to know how many yogurts you're getting through then, Ben. Is this a bit like your orange juice phase as a student? Are you just leaning in too heavily on a single dietary product?
You like to, because the way you see it is you eat your lifetime's amount of each thing, but just one at a time, rather than so you'll spend sort of 7 years on yogurt.
Yeah, 2008 was all blancmange.
It was all blancmange.
And I'm forecasting 2026 to be kielbasa time.
what is that?
I think it's a Polish sausage, I think.
Oh, nice.
It's going to accelerate things.
Do you think a weird thing about yogurt I noticed the other day is that why is it that there are two things in the world which you can get in bio and non-bio form? Yogurt and clothes detergent.
And weapons as well? You can get weapons?
Weapons.
Yeah.
That's true. So is yogurt... weapons and clothes detergent.
Soft baby biomissiles.
Oh, yeah. Work even at low temperatures.
Non-bio javelins.
Also, they're both, well, certainly yogurt and washing up fluid. No, that's a horrible way of saying it.
Liquid.
Washing liquid. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
Washing up. So, what are you talking about?
Like clothes detergent.
Yeah.
They're both white and gloopy. They've got exactly the same texture.
Mine's not white.
What isn't white?
I'm washing my clothes right now. I just put it in.
What colour was it?
What do you wash them in?
Translucent and green. Work out what that is.
Oh, well, that sounds homemade. That sounds like someone's trying to save a few pennies. They're scraping the moss off their roof.
Ben, you're not using old yogurt as washing detergent, are you?
It's so old it's become translucent. You're using the whey.
The whey.
Oh, dear. Green washing detergent, that's weird.
In my house, it's my whey or the high whey.
I did it my whey. Have I ever told you the story about the time when I put washing detergent in the dishwasher thinking it was dishwasher capsules, or the other way around, because I do get the two confused?
I imagine either way you're creating too many bubbles, I would imagine.
All you can do is pause that machine, whatever the machine is, and chuck whatever you didn't have in it before, whether that's crockery or jumpers. Either way, it's all going in.
It's all going in.
Don't waste that liquid.
Oh, dear.
Don't waste that sud.
I was staying in an Airbnb in Toronto, and it had a bubble bath, like a kind of home jacuzzi thing.
Yeah.
And I'd never used one of these in my life before, and I didn't realise you're not meant to do the bubbles with bubble bath. I didn't know this. This is a thing.
Did you double bubble?
I double bubbled.
I'm not supposed to double bubble.
It becomes exponential bubble.
It becomes exponential bubble.
It was unbelievable. I put a bit in.
Bubbles begetting bubbles. You were a very bubble god.
I left the bathroom for like 2 minutes to go and like take my clothes off, whatever. I got back to the room and the whole room was full of bubbles. I just opened the door and it was just bubbles. Then,
you must have had a riot.
Imagine the Habsburg smirk on your face when you saw those bubbles. Yes, of course. Delightful. Oh, no.
Release the butterflies into the bubbles.
It doesn't matter if a lot of them die. For they will delight
you. Oh, my precious schmetterlings. Oh, they love the bubbles.
God, that must have been, was it really good? But to me, that must have be a parable where you can't, you know, there must be a price to pay for that many bubbles, surely.
Well, I think if it were in my own home, I would have been fine. It was the fact I was in a rented accommodation. I was a bit worried that I was going to get in trouble, basically.
What, trouble bubble? What, double bubble trouble? You thought you were in double bubble trouble?
Yeah. I did think I was in double bubble trouble, yeah. But there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to kind of wait for it to dissipate and sort of try and smash it with your hands.
Or unless there's a bubble that's so big in the end, then you actually end up destroying the home, and you've got double bubble trouble rubble that you can end up with.
Or expanding it so it encapsulates the entire home.
Yeah, and then you float off. All the way back to Austria.
Yeah, usually that anything you try just makes it worse. There was a period, I know people complain about like kids and screen time and all that kind of stuff, but we I think we can forget what happened before screens. Kids still, they did need to be entertained. And in Portsmouth, where I grew up, there was a fountain, probably still is, on Commercial Road. And literally every weekend, a bored teenager would, they'd club together with their friends, they'd buy a bottle of fairy washing up liquid, they'd chuck it in the fountain. The entire street would be covered in bubbles.
That seems really wholesome now and lovely and really positive for their mental health and stuff.
They had a great time. Boomers really enjoyed tussing and, you know, Menard, blah, 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 do you know what I mean?
And that is a memorial to the Boer War, that fountain, actually.
So exactly.
Actually very offensive.
Well, the truth is it does actually clean out the pipes. Lovely. So we let it go.
Yeah.
So the point I was coming on to was that, so I'm now in like a yogurt regime.
Yes.
If I have a pang of hunger, I reach for the yogurt. Okay. Greek, little Greek. Mm-hmm. But it gets to a point where you're like, okay, this isn't scratching the itch. What I wanted to eat was a Twix.
Right.
Mm. So more yogurt then. Would you try and line up two fingers of yogurt in a row?
The Twix yogurt special edition.
The Twix yogurt special edition.
No, I did. Have you ever done this? I felt like an animal, like a gorilla. You know when the gorilla master at the zoo hides the bananas and fruits inside logs and stuff to try and give it like a challenge so it doesn't get dementia and whatever?
Mm.
I was like that, but looking for any piece of chocolate in my house that maybe had been forgotten about, or maybe an old gift. Someone had given us some weird liqueurs from like Denmark from 5 years ago.
In the back pocket of a pair of jeans somewhere.
Exactly. And I ended up, to my huge shame, I ended up eating like a box of chocolates that was meant to be someone's Christmas present, but we didn't give it to them because we didn't see them. It was like a hotel chocolat, like a box of chocolates.
You cracked it open.
I cracked it open, was like going,
gift chocolates.
Yeah, and had like, you know, raspberry liqueur and billionaire shortbread.
Wow.
Those should only be eaten as a gift. You should never be buying those. That's, you've sort of...
No, eating those just as part of your diet is completely wrong.
It's either it's okay for sort of a very elderly sort of Habsburg duchess, or if you're in the 80s, a sort of a bored younger woman in a negligee on a chaise longue,
in a Jackie Collins
for some reason, still has perfect dentition.
Yeah.
And a very good complexion, even though she appears to just be eating luxury chocolates surrounded by silk. And I feel like there were a lot.
And Ben is closer to the second, isn't he? He's closer to the second.
Closer to the second.
But it's still
and
not a
getting closer
fit.
By the day.
That must have felt delightfully wrong and bad to be eating, to feel your teeth be going through that kind of soft, truffly kind of texture or things with liqueurs in. That should never. You've almost sort
you
of.
Shouldn't, you shouldn't experience praline at 9:45 a.m. Should you?
You shouldn't. You shouldn't. You shouldn't be eating it within a nutrition window.
In the shower.
Yeah. Well, certainly in the shower. Were you even looking at the instructions card and stuff and sort of?
No, because there was none of that ceremony around it because it wasn't like Christmas Day. I wasn't handing it around a table after a dinner. I wasn't enjoying it with.
You were sat on the bog, weren't you? It's a normal disturb you.
It's a normal lunch. It was just it was Ben's normal time-saving lunch. You do the breakfast dump and the lunchtime feed at the same time, and in the evening you do the evening feed and the lunchtime dump. In the morning you're doing the previous night's dinner dump and the previous day. So you're it's two birds with one stone, isn't it?
Yeah. So actually, and you realise that once you do eat those things outside of the ceremony that we have created around them, they're sort of not that
Ben. You know,
no,
what?
They're gross. They're all gross.
And I found myself in a weirdly, vaguely similar situation in that I've got in my cupboard, when we did our gigs in Bath recently, I bought a big chunk of fudge with the intention of giving it to someone who I know loves fudge, but I haven't seen that person.
And so you've been adding it to bolognese's,
stirring it through,
grating it over a frittata.
I've actually been cubing it into little cubes and using it as a dishwasher capsules. It does all sorts. I clean my shoes with it. But it's in my cupboard. But you see, because it's a gift chocolate or it's a gift food, it would feel so wrong to eat it. I haven't yet eaten it. But what you're doing is equivalent of me getting that huge chunk of fudge that I bought, putting it between two slices of white bread. Putting a bit of mayo and ham and tomatoes in there and just scoffing it. What's that?
I've got a gift right here that's been next to me since December.
Okay.
It was wrapped as a Christmas gift, but during quite a heavy period of like wrapping everyone's presents, like a Christmas present wrapping intensive.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it is or who it was for.
Wow.
It might be edible. I mean, it might be chocolates.
Well, should we do a little roulette thing where you open it and whatever it is, you have to eat it live on camera?
Lovely.
Even if it's a Grisham.
It's an electronic Grisham.
It's an Airfix Spitfire.
Oh, I would weep as I ate it.
Poison glue edition.
Anyway, right. This is Extra Beans.
This is Extra Beans. Hello. Thanks for being here.
Now, our first episode this series, if I remember correctly...
It was on space travel tourism.
It was.
Ah. And just like space goes on and on and on and on forever...
Nice. Yes,
so do we, to an extent. And so here's some more stuff from our recording.
Really good.
About space travel tourism.
Infinity banter.
Infinity banter. Also, while listening to this banter, do make sure you exercise your calves, your glutes, your IT bands... Because it can deteriorate your muscle mass, can't it?
Stare directly into the banter.
Don't stare directly at it.
No.
Good luck. God bless. And we'll see you on re-entry. One thing they say is if you go to space, when you look back at the Earth, something happens to your brain. It's called the overview effect.
Is that true?
Yeah. Are you aware of that? So it's a thing which is only experienced by people that have gone to space and looked at the Earth.
What about people who've seen a photograph of the Earth?
Then they also get it as well. It's stronger from a photograph because you can see it in more detail and you can see the whole thing. So don't, for the love of God, look at a photo of the Earth unless you
want a bit of perspective.
That's because if you keep zooming out on Google Maps, after a while it says, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
What you're about to see is going to change everything about the way you see yourself and the universe.
Yeah. So various astronauts have reported this, this experience. And generally what happens is...
Isn't it instant Christianity?
Well, it's not... Well, I don't know if it's not quite Christianity, but it does have a political leaning, which is a bit odd.
Which way?
Well, Dem.
Straight down the middle.
It's Lib Dem. Because you look at the world and it's shimmering, and what's that?
It's free market, but with regulation.
It's regulated freedom.
Parity of taxation.
Exactly. It's not nanny state. It's a state that is like a part-time au pair.
with a really good first aid kit.
And an interest in Europe and languages.
she's doing a PhD in ornithology. but actually, she's actually a really, really good jazz singer as well. And she started doing some gigs in London.
Is that how you see a Lib Dem, your average Lib Dem?
I don't know.
So a PhD level ornithologist with a jazz career.
With a husky alto jazz voice.
That's what happens if you get the overview effect. No, but you see the beautiful, what happens is because you see the light behind the earth shimmers, and what happens is it goes through the atmosphere and it refracts slightly and creates this beautiful shimmer, and that colour is Auburn?
Auburn?
Auburn. What's the Lib Dem colour?
Yellow?
It's not yellow. It's basically yellow. Yeah. And you look at the sun and you see the source of all life is yellow. It is the Lib Dem. It is the Liberal Democrats. The Liberal Democrats is what we all revolve around. It's the source of life itself. Without it, we are nothing. So what happens is you look at the earth and you go, oh, everyone's little and small and tiny on this little globe. And you look at the globe and you think,
and I, a conqueror, shall be.
Well, that's the thing. That's, Mike, that's why I'm not allowed on the Today program, and I'm also not allowed in the Space program of any nation on Earth. Yeah, because you'd think it could go that way. But what happens is, so far, they've all gone, oh, the Earth looks really small and gentle and sort of vulnerable when you see it in its totality. We need to protect it. We need to protect all of life. The Earth is sort of, I don't know, sacred and wonderful and vulnerable, and we need to protect it. So you basically come down with a bit of a green agenda.
Having chalked up a pretty heavy carbon footprint, dare I say.
Good point.
Oh.
Good point. That's why there's a hypocrisy valve in the reentry craft, isn't there? There's a strong hypocrisy valve which you have to press. Because, you see, if I went up there, I suspect that's why there's rigorous psychological checking. It's not just how meaty your calves when you go up.
Are you happy to be spun around really fast quite a bit without being sick?
Yeah, the old gyroscope test.
Important.
Yeah. There'll be psychological testing, because I think if I went up and looked down at the Earth, right, I can imagine it now, I can see it. It's a globe. Oh, when I can see it all in one go. When I close my eyes, it's gone. When I open my eyes, it's there again. When I blink, it's gone.
It doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. I can make it not exist. I can make the earth not exist. I am a very, very God. I am effectively the leader of the Liberal Democrats. I have quite a significant amount of members of parliament. Not enough to create any kind of majority, but a significant amount of seats.
I've got a decent foothold in the southwest.
Oh, you better believe it.
But it is fragile.
Oh, it's fragile, all right. And of course, who else works in the southwest? Rick Stein. Together, we could set up a series of Liberal Democrat themed fish restaurants. with only yellow sauces. Bearnaise. That's it. Oh, Hollandaise.
Mustard.
Mustard. Yellow ketchup. Don't ask us how we make it.
We milk Min Campbell. We've had an email from Roddy.
Hello, Roddy.
Hi, Roddy.
Hello, Beans. You discussed the Tiffany problem in a recent episode.
Yes.
Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, you can't remind me.
The idea that certain historical names sound oddly anachronistic to us because we associate them with the modern day.
Yes, yes, yes.
Brackets Tiffany, Shane, Beverly, etc.
Yeah.
Because they sound like they're modern, but they're actually very old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You might be interested to know that in 1379, in West Riding, Yorkshire...
I know this. There was a duke called the Cybertron 5000. Yeah, I know this story.
Yeah. You might be interested to know that in 1379 in West Riding, Yorkshire, there was a little girl born named Diet Coke. All the best, Roddy.
Very, very good. Love that.
Diet Coke.
You know what? There probably was a Dr. Pepper quite in medieval times.
There may be one now.
Yeah. Hang on, before you do that, I've just asked ChatGPT What's the first example of someone called Dr. Pepper? The first use of the name Dr. Pepper is associated with a soft drink, Dr. Pepper. Yeah, well done. Yeah, we're going back to taken over by robots. No, we're not. That's pathetic.
But also, ChatGPT is rubbish. The other day, I was reading about how ChatGPT is sometimes better than Google Translate.
Right.
And I was using Google Translate quite a lot when I was away. So I tried ChatGPT, and just to give it a test, I just said, what is the Welsh word for badger?
Right.
And it said, the Welsh word for badger is bodger.
Yeah,
which it isn't.
But I tell you what is a bodger, ChatGPT. He bodged the job of that translation.
Really strange. Really strange.
I've asked ChatGPT, is three bean salad good?
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
It said, three bean salad can be great, depending on how it's made and your taste preferences. It's a classic dish, typically made with green beans, kidney beans, and garbanzo beans. I think Mike's green, Ben's kidney, and garbanzo. I'm pretty sure garbanzo is referenced to me, isn't it? Tossed in a tangy sweet vinaigrette. It's actually not a bad description of us. Okay.
Sam has emailed.
Oh, Sam.
Now, he is referring to an old episode in which Henry talks about the plate smash fucking anecdote.
Yes.
Oh, God. Stressful.
Can you just give us a summary of the smash fuck anecdote? If people
haven't heard it? I was working as a runner in a TV company years and years ago. It was maybe my first job, possibly, or a very early job. And we were shooting a detergent ad in a lovely old, like, Georgian house somewhere in Maida Vale or something. It was like a stunning property that the old lady who owned the house was letting them film in. And this was a beautiful old, like something out of Downton or something. It was a beautiful house with amazing antiques. And I had a job, which was they'd had to remove all of these plates. And
you had one job.
I had one job. it was to remove all these plates and things from a wall. And because it had all that decorative antique plates on a wall. Loads and loads and loads of them had to come down while they filmed the scene. And then I had to put them back on afterwards. I put all of them. The mistake I made was to start at the bottom and go up. Like the pyramids, you've got to start at the top and go down if you can. Because if I'd started at the top and the plate had popped out, it just would have broken one plate. But I started at the bottom. I did them all. And the last plate I put on, I put it into the little mechanism, which is a little metal mechanism with a little spring, which held the plate in place on a slight angle, a decorative plate. It's a valuable decorative plate because you don't tend to display on a wall plates that aren't very, very valuable, it turns out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I put it in. For some reason, it just everything was fine. And then the spring just kind of shot out a bit and the plate just went, just like a one-inch movement, the plate just went off the wall. Nothing, really. Just 2 inches in space-time, in the history of the universe, nothing, a nothing event. Little plate, one inch forward, fell down onto the two plates underneath it, which then sneered out to the four plates underneath that, which then sneered out to the 16 plates underneath that, which then sneered out to the 84 plates, and then sneered out to the 279 exponential plate. And it created a smash fuck effect, which was smashing, was fucking plates underneath, which was smashing other plates, which were getting fucked, and they were fucking plates that were smashing other plates at an exponential rate. So there became a kind of smash fuck kind of gyration was happening on the wall in front of me. Of just smashy, smashy fuck, smash fuck, smash. Very, very noisy as well. Incredibly noisy disaster happened in front of me. And the plates became a symbol of my prospects for future employment in the TV industry as well.
So Sam has emailed. Sam writes, hello, Beans. After listening to the plate smash fucking anecdote, I remembered my own son's smash fuckery.
Oh, God.
As an 8-year-old, my son and his class visited a local art gallery. There was an exhibition from a German artist involving lights and colours where the visitors put on polarising glasses to look at bits and pieces. My wee lad had pretty thick prescription glasses, as he's short-sighted. So, enchanted by the polarising glasses, he left them on when the class continued the next part of the tour.
Okay.
They paused to look at a large installation by a very well-known local artist, which had lights and shiny bits and an ankle-high security rope, keeping punters at arm's length.
Oh, no.
Mesmerised by the polarised light and undeterred by the security rope, my son went to touch the large installation.
Oh, no.
Tangled in rope and not being blessed with an 8 balance, he fell bodily on, in, upwards, downwards, sideways, through and around the piece.
Oh God.
Yeah, I know that fall. It's a fall where you're sort of walking and falling and tumbling and you're just moving. Your arms are flapping. It's the ultimate it's the most destructive set of movements you can do.
It's kind of durational fall, isn't it?
It's a durational fall.
Yeah, every attempt at correction is a thresh.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fresh thresh, creating a fresh problem that you. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
He 100% smash fucked the insulation.
Oh, great!
That had a price tag of £850,000.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, sweet God.
Oh, man. That's sickening.
Although the good thing is, if you take security camera footage of what happened, you can actually sell that as insulation base and win the bloody Turner Prize. It's actually more entertaining than the actual bloody art. Yeah.
Dan writes, Dear Beans, in May of last year, I, a 33-year-old man from Sussex, mm-hmm. found myself in need of a car after my trusty 2007 Ford Focus shat the bed.
Sorry to hear it, Dan.
It was while listening to Three Bean Salad and perusing Auto Trader that I came across a shiny black 2004 Saab 9-3 convertible. I thought of Ben saying how wonderful it felt to drive, and it compelled me, and I swiftly bought it for £2,000.
Is that the exact one you've got? The Saab 9-3?
It's the Saab 9-3 convertible. It's a slightly different year, different colour.
Okay. Okay,
you know, similar vibes. I quickly found out, as Henry could have told me, that this car became an instant money pit. And 3 months later, it was on the scrap heap, having cost around £225 per week of use.
Oh, my God.
In future, I will listen to Henry and only Henry's wisdom when it comes to cars. All the best, Dan.
Dan,
you could have leased a Ferrari for that, probably, couldn't you? Yes. But what a car, though. I'm just looking at it online.
Yeah, we're not famously the nation's most trusted auto podcast.
No.
We're not, are we?
No. And I don't know why he's saying that he should listen to Henry. I'm not sure, you know.
And no, I wouldn't trust Henry for a moment.
No.
When it comes to auto vehicles.
How is your Saab, Ben? It
keeps needing expensive repairs, but it's nice still.
What's your main A to B car?
My Saab 9-3. Convertible.
That's how you get around?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a lovely feature of the Saab, isn't it?
It can get from A to B.
It can get from A to B.
If you're prepared to invest £225 a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the next one, when we released this and then put it on social media,
yep.
I was quite pleased with myself with a little pun I thought of to put on the tweet. So I put it down. I put down Jack and the Beans Talk.
I remember that,
Very good, Ben.
Yeah.
Because it was about giants. We talked about Jack and the Beans Talk.
Ben, you know those? I've basically stopped tweeting about the show because I find it so wearing having to come up with those puns. It's so wearing. Also, because you always snaffle up the good ones, you and Mike. You're up with the lark, and you snaffle up the good ones, leaving me on it.
But I think that one I just said, I think it has the appearance of a good one. But once you start to analyse it, even the tiniest bit, it doesn't make any sense. And
who
actually,
the fuck's
it's no good.
Jack?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
If we'd interviewed a guy called Jack about giants, then Jack and the Beans Talk would have been the perfect.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah.
But who is Jack? So exactly, it doesn't really work. And actually, I felt then ashamed that I'd done like a kind of.
That's the thing with puns.
Semi-pun.
You have to commit with puns. You can't just do the odd pun. I mean, this is why like Tim Vine and Milton Jones, I mean, they know what they're doing. You move on to the next pun. You keep moving. You do not let them stop and scrutinize it for a moment.
Don't keep moving and just try and make sure the last one makes sense. And if not, you take a t-shirt gun, you shove it full of sweets and you fire it in their faces.
Well, you sing the national anthem.
You do something that accesses a different level of truth than you for your closing gag.
Yeah. And you keep that engine running outside.
Keep that engine running.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's extra stuff from our episode about giants.
Oh, yeah.
I've had an extraordinary experience today, which is the first day of spring. The weather has been getting better, but today in London, it's absolutely freezing. So something really weird's gone on. Because I popped out this morning. It's freezing cold. So we've had So weather is a form, it's an expression of pressure, isn't it, through water globules.
Yeah? That's right. That refract heat.
Yeah. And have an inversely proportional relationship with human mood, mm-hmm. doesn't it? So it creates a very, very, very complex picture. But basically, you can't be cold and basically you're never cold and wet at the same time. Isn't it?
Okay, this is a hot take.
To put it simply,
you need to hold in Wales, Henry, and you're going to get that experience.
No. If you're cold and wet, it's your own fault. That's not the weather. It's because it's for your own personal reasons. Do you know what I mean? Because if it's raining, that means the pressure's low, I think, or high.
Yeah. I mean, or the other way around.
Or just the right amount of a bit of both. No, but essentially, generally, it's cold and dry, isn't it, normally? Or if it's raining, the one boon is that it's slightly warm. It generally isn't freezing with rain, is it? Because that'll turn into what sort of icicles that went all the way from the clouds down to the ground. It's not possible. Do you know what I mean? I've just sensed I'm at one of these weird meteorological events where it's been warm, and then suddenly today it's freezing. It's 2 degrees. Which is literally freezing. And then and there's sudden this mist. So there's mist and fog. So it's very, very dramatic. So I walked out into the street, freezing cold, mist, fog everywhere.
Yeah.
Got on a Lime bike.
Golly, that feels brave. And through the London fog, the London morning fog.
Through the London morning fog, I got on a Lime bike to go to...
Was it a ripe pea super?
I suppose, you know what? It is actually a bit of a pea super.
Hmm.
Although I'd say a kind of, because it's modern London now, it's more of a kind of, you know, sort of maybe sort of honey infused chili with a hint of chili pea soup, you know, like an interesting pea soup. A little bit of a sausage on it or something. A little bit of andouille. A sausage garnish.
A sausage garnish.
Exactly.
See, we would never have a sausage garnish down here. That would be the main event.
And so.
We were going out to commit a sort of classic London mist murder.
Yeah. A canal side shanking.
On days like this, you just think it would almost be rude not to. And also, if you've got murders that you've had on your to-do list for ages, it's like, on a day like this, you just go, you know what, it'd be easy.
They're lovely, those mornings. On a weekend when it's quiet, there's less traffic, and you just listen, and you can hear the plop, 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 plop of corpses falling into the canal on the Thames.
And it's old beefs being resolved, vengeance is being wreaked.
Blood-soaked wharfs.
Yeah. And then, of course, then the day after the pea soup, there's a big... It's the same people that clean up at the end of Glastonbury. They hire who go around, just
putting out gold teeth.
Yeah, because a lot of it's recyclable, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, it is. No, so what I did was the reason I got a Lime bike because normally I'd get a Pret coffee and a bacon roll in the morning of a record from a local Pret because it's a Saturday, it's not open. I have to go slightly further afield to one of the other 95 Prets within my sort of postal district of London. Yeah. But I had to get on a little so anyway, so I thought things are harbing. I thought it's a harbingy. It's cold. It's spring. It's spring, but it's cold. It's a weird. There's fog. You just imagine what the newts must be so confused. You know, is it spring or not? What the hell's going on? There'll be newt conference. There'll be emergency newt conferences happening right there across the ponds of Britain right now.
There'll be a newt hibernation lobby, won't there?
Keir Starmer will have stuff on his desk today about is it easier to bring forward Christmas? Do we have a second Christmas now? Get it out of the way now in this financial year. If we get two Christmases in before April the 1st. So I thought it's all feeling a bit ominous.
Mm.
And then I cycled past a dead rat. I'm sorry, I did. Now,
has Keir Starmer brought forward Ratmus?
He may have had to bring forward Ratmus.
Towards which point of the compass was the rat facing, crucially?
Well, here's the thing.
Directly up.
I'm afraid so. It's the one bit the compass doesn't have covered is up. The compass only has four flat directions. It doesn't have a name. There isn't a
doesn't
name.
Doesn't acknowledge
for it.
Up or down.
No, there's north, east, south, west. What the fuck is up? There isn't one. So, anyway, there was a rat in the middle of the road. I actually, genuinely, I cycled past this dead rat and I got to the lights. And I went, I'm going to have another look at that. I did it. So I got back round again. Because it was taking me quite a long time to digest what I'd seen.
Yeah.
Ooh. So it was a flat dead rat, which is fairly standard.
Cause of death? I mean, in that sort of crime scene, you're imagining it's a flattening, like flattening to death?
Yes, is it a post-mortem flattening or?
Well, I'll tell you some more of the information. I mean, generally speaking, that is a classic case of it's been flattened normally by a Royal Mail van. Mm-hmm. Or a truck or a bus. I mean, normally it's fairly open and shut. The police they'll do like a very very quick minimal press conference. They'll you know the whole thing's wrapped up normally in the car. You normally don't have to bother a jury trial. Normally magistrates can handle it.
Yeah,
yeah. The whole thing's normally fairly open and shut. This one is a bit more weird. So the rat it was flattened.
Supine or prone?
Great question.
I'm going to say indeterminate.
By prone, do you mean standing up?
Prone to what, Mike?
prone to what? Nibbling. Yeah. Screeching. Yeah, certainly in his day. He had that look about him.
Was it lying on its back or lying on its front?
Supine or prone? Supine.
Lying on its back.
So supine.
Oh, it's lying, what, belly up?
Yep, belly up.
That is weird.
See, that doesn't suggest being run over unless it was just trying to just stretch out and take five for a minute.
He might have thought, I mean, could it be linked to this whole spring thing? It's a nice day. I'm going to go supine. Oh, the cold snap's come in.
Yeah.
I can't move now.
I'm dead.
I'm dead. And then just this is the realization that he was dead. So in that case, it could have been a post-mortem flattening. Mm. Anyway, it's on its back. Bottom legs splayed.
Mm-hmm.
A bit sort of Charlie Chaplin. Mm-hmm. Charlie Chaplin type stance with feet.
Okay.
The rat had a circular wound about the size of a pound coin in its towards the bottom left of its under thorax.
Mm-hmm.
Abdominum.
Again, you really struggle with that one, don't you? You really want to throw in another syllable.
Abdomen? I can't say abdomen. Abdomen.
That's okay. I prefer yours.
So a big, fat, red wound.
Mm. Wow. This is interesting.
Bottom left.
But again, is that post-mortem?
I don't know.
Is this from the beak of a foul crow? Or is it a gunshot wound? Powder burns?
How do you get powder burns?
Well, if it was point blank range.
Oh, I see. Bloody hell. Oh, so we're going like blood spatter levels of detail.
I
like
know. Is this post-mortem, pre-mortem? We don't know about the wound, you know.
Okay, I don't know. All I know is it's bright red. The other thing that was strange about it was, which I probably should have mentioned at the beginning, its head was completely fuck-a-doodle-dandied. The rat's head was absolutely... I mean... It's not going to get identified by relatives or anyone, that rat. We'll probably never know who that rat actually was.
Okay.
So the head was sort of both missing and still sort of there in a completely ghastly sort of...
Okay.
Absolutely...
So not even dental records. We're talking DNA from a hairbrush or toothbrush.
We're talking DNA, yeah. The head was absolute. And that, I feel, probably was post-mortem.
Okay.
Because we're talking other rats, let's be honest. It's not a nice community. No. We're talking, obviously, first day of spring, so we're talking hungry frogs, newts, toads.
Mm-hmm. Lambs.
Lambs fresh out of hibernation.
Lambs.
And those lambs are hungry. They're cross.
Oh, we're also talking about an army of interns, young fresh graduates that have just got their first job in the rhubarb industry. who are running around town cock-a-hoop and just full of excitement. And...
And things will get out of hand, won't they?
Things will get out of hand. Now, the other thing that's odd about it is that it was in the middle of the left lane of the road, so it wasn't in line with where the wheel of a car would be. That was the first thing that struck me as weird about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, and there's another thing. Sorry. It wasn't in line with the road. It was rotated 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. It was on a 90-degree angle to the direction of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You saw some, I don't know, yeah, which I thought was weird.
Could it not have been crossing the road?
On its back, Mike.
It's a weird one. I don't know. It was just.
This feels very Jonathan Creek.
It felt very exactly. It's a classic fucked rat mystery.
I will do email in if you. I mean,
if you've got any theories, email in.
My theory, I think, just coming, you know, an early theory.
Yeah.
Listening to all this, you've got that pound coin sized hole.
Yes.
In the bottom left
yeah.
And the fucked head. I think someone has tried to plug that rat in to their cigarette lighter in their car somehow.
Yes.
And the head's exploded.
Yes.
Do you think it was a kind of a naive but good-willed attempt to bring it back to life, to resuscitate it?
Maybe.
Yeah. By attaching it to the cigarette lighter. To just, let's get some heat into it.
The old high on diet ND fib.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think someone's done a Heath Robinson defib on this.
Yeah. Rat. His head's exploded.
Head's exploded.
Yeah.
It's a good working theory.
That's my theory. What's your theory, Mike?
I think that's plausible. I think the central bit of the road, I mean, sounds to me all the live long day like a moped delivery driver in a rush.
That's a good point.
Good point.
My theory is the moped's gone over it, right? And that's what's killed this rat who's just been trying to cross the rows.
Yeah.
Right, to get to the is it spring not conference. That impact has launched a hard pudding box full of tiramisus out of the pouch at the back of the moped. That's flown up into the air. That's landed on the head of the rat, further crushing it. Sometime later, along has come a perfectly innocent litter picker, has seen the crushed tiramisu box, tried to pick up the litter. In doing so, has pierced the corpse of the rat.
Okay.
Has run off in horror.
Yeah.
With the tiramisu box, leaving the corpse. That's my theory.
And you know what the irony is? It was, I did order a delivery of a big box of tiramisu from a post-podcast snack today.
It never arrived.
No.
Now, sometimes with this podcast, obviously when you listen to it the first time, you get all of the banter, or in this metaphor, bloomage. Is that a word?
No.
Ooh, why not? Let's have it.
Like plumage, but for flowers. Yeah. Bloomage.
Mm-hmm. Bloomage.
But sometimes with gardening, you know, some plants will come along later, they'll flower slightly later in the season. You'll get a second lot of bloomage.
Yes.
Yes.
And ideally, you want to keep the bloomage going throughout the sort of summer months. And so this is a version of that, really. You've had a bit of gardening chat.
Yeah.
But now it's the second flush of the bloomage.
Nice. And sometimes there's a bulb that actually just doesn't take, or you're digging up and you find an old bulb and you're not even sure, was it a bulb, or did someone just put a potato in some soil and what were they thinking was happening? It's sort of rotting and it's got no life. It never was going to thrive.
Or is it a dead rabbit's head?
Could be a dead rabbit's head.
Or, why the hell is there a box of Shreddies half buried? And what's that inside it? It's a human hand. That sort of thing can happen.
And if I'm not mistaken, that hand belongs to Alan Titchmarsh.
And it's still attached to him. All right, Titchy, how you doing, mate? he was digging his own garden. He got lost underground.
Yes. So, yeah, here's more gardening stuff.
Yes, please.
Enjoy. By the way, I mentioned the bulb zannia in that episode.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The bulb zannia has really come into its own.
Oh, lovely.
Beautiful.
All the colours of the rainbow now.
Yeah. It's all promised. Come up. It's beautiful.
Why don't you take a photo of it and send it to somebody who gives a shit? Right. Move on. I don't know why I did that. Sorry. I do actually care as well, weirdly.
You'll never see it. Oh, I'm going to make sure you never see a flower again in your life.
Next time Henry comes to visit, you're just going to trash it. You're going to take a squash racket to it. And completely obliterate it with tears in your eyes.
I'm sorry, Hyacinth. I'm sorry, Snowdrops.
I swore he would never see it.
And then finally he turned the squash racket on himself.
And became good at squash.
And became really good at squash.
New hobby. The big challenge in my garden is that I live on this kind of new build estate and there are no birds here. It's like complete. It's weird to the extent there are no birds.
Are there
here.
No hedges or trees or?
That's the problem.
So whenever you leave the house every morning, does it feel like you might be at the beginning of a dystopian Netflix series?
But basically,
where the first sign is, hang on a minute.
It's too quiet.
So that's the energy you go into every day with.
Basically, yes. And so we've been trying to attract birds to our garden. But yeah, Mike, there aren't really enough trees and bushes around. It's too concrete hellscape, really. But we've been trying to attract them. Mm-hmm. So then all we managed to do was attract a fuck ton of magpies.
So Ben, is this why you bought that sexy chicken costume? Because remember, it got sent to me by accident and we had to resend it.
Yeah, the full chicken leather bodysuit.
The full chicken leather bodysuit. So it's you parading up and down in front of the house?
Yeah.
Coquettishly.
Yeah, it turns out they're kind of repelled by that.
Ah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
No, it's not true. That yeah, because you'd read that the larks would try to mate with it, but it's not true at all.
Like, we put food out and stuff, but all that happens is, like, these magpies come and eat it.
Squirrels? Do squirrels get interested in your bird feed?
No, there's just no nature here of any kind.
What's wrong with magpies, though? Why does that not count, having magpies come along?
They're a bit bully boy, aren't they?
Magpies? Are they? I don't know.
Well, they're thieves, for starters.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I know that.
I don't think they coexist very nicely with other birds, so if there's magpies in your garden, no other birds are going to come in, because they're just nasty and clever and wily.
Yeah.
I thought you had, like, an apple tree or something.
I've got a few apple trees, yeah. They all got totally fucked by magpies.
So are those trees still there?
Yeah.
But
every time they fruit, the fruit is eaten by a magpie.
Oh, that's difficult. That's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah. So we were trying to get other kinds of birds by putting different stuff out, you know, quiches, sort of buffet, sort of classic breakfast buffet, pancakes, eggs, any way you like.
Bao buns,
perfect, Mike. You know, just
you really had that magic eye photo of Bilodi, didn't you?
Unfortunately, birds can't cross their eyes.
So the whole thing was, if that's the opposite, isn't it? They can only look at anything with one eye at a time, because they actually can't look at anything with both eyes, can they? That's because they've got one eye on each side of their head. So they've actually got two, because they see two sets of data, don't they, visually?
Yeah, they see the whole world as a sort of magic eye thing.
It's sort of split screen. No, it's more like 70 split screen is how they see the world, I think.
So for like 2 years, we just had magpies and that was it. The occasional crow, which is basically
Ben, would you ever just think to yourself, you know what, a magpie is a legitimate airborne part of nature. It's an avian, it's a bird.
Yeah.
Why not just like magpies?
Do you think I just need to flip the script in my brain? And get
a little
excited
bit, because you're kind of doing a thing which I think you're not supposed to do, which is you're entertaining the idea that certain animals can be bastards, which I don't think is true. Animals are just animals. We've already established this. They do what is in their nature.
Yeah, which but is I think it's in bastard. The nature of a magpie to be a bastard.
Okay.
Yeah. Rather than like a sweet little blue tit.
Yeah.
But you're kind of, I think you're projecting human features onto your anthropomorphizing, aren't you?
Yes, I got to finally use that word in real life.
I mean, you're right, but how can you not?
I tell you who is a nature's bastard.
Yeah.
It's cuckoos. Are they the ones?
Famously, yes.
Yeah. That's
maybe you
order.
Need to upgrade, because at the moment you're going for the sort of the berry-eating, fatball-attracted birds.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to, like, tie some sort of baby goats to stakes and stuff and see if you can attract some
red
pterodactyls. That's quite ambitious. Also, you don't end up with a pterodactyl problem because they're bloody hard to shift, and the council pest people will not answer your calls.
You might at the very least get a condor. Who knows?
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be good to get one of those birds that swallow entire salmons whole. I'd like to watch that. Yeah. out of my window.
But one thing did happen, which was that we've been here for about 2 years, had only seen magpies in the garden, the occasional crow.
Mm.
And then I looked out, and on my fence post was a bird that I'd never seen before. I looked it up, and it's incredibly rare.
Really?
How did you look it up?
Using the RSPB website.
But did you just use it words to describe it?
Are you calling into question whether I saw this bird or not, Henry?
Words are his weapons, Henry. Man's a professional writer.
That's true.
He describes birds all day.
I can conjure a bird with words.
But like, because if you just said, like, black and white bird with a big beak.
It's too good. Move on.
Because you might have accidentally described, like, a dodo or something. How did you describe it?
What was the bird? Do you remember?
Because I wouldn't know how to describe a bird. What, pink head, big ears?
Like, I mean, already you're in the rare trough, as it is.
The big-eared warbler.
We thought it was extinct.
I wish I could remember what it was.
Because you'd need to know which bits, like blue headpiece, pink plumage, mm-hmm. orange breast.
Yeah.
You'd have to know the different names of the bits.
Polka dot belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had sort of a pink chest, but it wasn't a robin.
Because you know what you could have ended up with, Ben, is if you'd put that online, is loads of twitchers, as they call it, isn't it, coming to your garden. Is that how it works? Because they'll swarm to...
And then display endless patience. They'll be there for months.
Yes. You can't shift them. And eventually you'll be bringing them cups of tea and Scottish shortbread.
That's how they survive.
That's how they survive. It's tea and shortbread.
So I think the bird I saw, looking it up, is a red start.
A red start. How can I have a look at that? I've not heard of it.
I mean, how would you describe that in a way that... So I'd say orange breast.
Okay.
Grey helmet. Sort of bicolour wings, top half grey, bottom half black.
Twig-like feet.
Yeah. Twig-like feet, that's all birds except penguins and ducks. So all you've done is take it out of the penguin and duck
arena. Is it the sort of size of a robin redbreast? It looks like it's got quite a robin redbreasty kind of roundness.
Well, you can't tell unless you know exactly how close you are to it, Mike. Ben, did you know how close you were to it? Was it on something that you recognise?
Yes, it was on my fence.
Okay, so perfect.
And looking at it now, it looks like they're not actually that rare, but it's I'd never heard of it. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Nice. But a one-off, right?
Definitely a one-off,
yeah. You didn't then go on to befriend the Red Start and as the start of something meaningful and sort of meme-worthy.
No, sadly not.
Here's a couple of the perennial bird mystery questions I'm just going to put out there rhetorically, really. I know there's no answer to these.
Yeah.
First one, obvious. How the fuck do they reproduce? They don't have dicks.
Play the quacker jingle.
Welcome to the Cloaca Zone.
Two, where do robin breadbreasts go? Mm. So where do robin bread...
breadbreasts.
Where do robin breadbreasts go? Because I've never seen a robin breadbreast. But presumably they're constantly getting pecked by other robins. No. So where do robin redbreasts go when it's not Christmas?
They're known as the gardener's friend, the robin.
Oh, really?
Because they're quite bold, so they don't fly away so much if you're... They can sit near you as you garden away.
That's quite sweet.
Because they're bastards. Robins are massive bastards.
So why are they bastards?
They're just really bold and they fight other birds and they're just like...
So aggressive.
They're an aggressive little short man syndrome kind of thing with the robin.
The thing about birds is... So even looking at that red start, to me, they're beautiful and extremely cute if they are in 2D form on a greetings card.
Right.
And maybe even seen through a window whereby the whole world is kind of a greetings card, isn't it, when you're looking out through a window? Because it's a sort of squared off interpretation of the world that can't actually affect you directly. But in real life, like, they're just... Well, obviously, if it comes into your room, it's a fucking disaster. It's an airborne rat. It's a fucking disaster, isn't it? Like, they're right on the cusp of cute and beautiful, but also, like, you could just see them as completely monstrous. Just those twig-like feet and the little pecking and the kind of...
Well, it's where the front is sharp, right? Do you know what I mean? Sharp. Like, if you walk into a human being, they're not sharp. You might hurt yourself, but the front bit isn't a piercing spike. If you walk into a bird, that's the first bit you come across. It's like a nail. Yeah.
The completely lifeless black Henry Packer style eyes as well.
Yes, they've got the Henry Packer eyes.
Yeah.
They're basically an airborne Henry Packer with a beak and a cloaca. It is the stuff of horror, isn't it? It's the stuff of true, true horror.
I wanted to make sure I was right, so I googled, are robins aggressive? And then I found a site that's called Do Robins Fight to the Death?
Ooh, with whom?
I guess other robins, probably. Right. Okay, so much of the fighting is for show only.
Okay.
But sometimes it gets more serious, with the robin lashing out with its claws and pecking at the rival's neck in an attempt to sever the spinal cord.
Good God. So specific.
By the way, a little way of testing out whether something is bastard behaviour or not is imagine it in human form at a dinner party.
Right. So you're talking like if you've got a dinner guest that is headbutting someone else's neck to try and sever their...
Yeah.
Spinal cord, you might be dealing with a wrong one.
Yeah, I mean, basically, your tiramisu is going to have to be absolutely astonishing for the headbutting incident not to be the main takeaway anecdote from the evening. Throw everything you've got at that tiramisu. You're going to have to invent it and add a brand new layer.
It's a mustard-a-sou. An estimated 10% of all adult male robin deaths and 3% of female deaths are caused by other robins attacking them.
Good Lord.
They've got a big murder rate, haven't they?
Yeah.
Can I say that slightly gives the lie to the whole thing of like, and of course the most dangerous animal on Earth is humans. So actually, maybe we're not the worst animal, morally.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? This kind of feel like it's an assumption that we are somehow.
The problem is, though, robins don't kill other species, I don't think, or other...
Worms.
They do kill worms. Good point, yeah, Mike. Good point. Yeah, they are bastards.
Yeah.
Humans are brilliant. We invented the tiramisu.
Let's declare war on robin redbreasts.
Hang on a minute. I think it's time to declare a bird apocalypse. Get out there and kill some birds. And if you keep track of it on the bird apocalypse app, we'll send you some poison bird feed. So I've asked ChatGPT if magpies are bastards, and it says it depends on who you ask. Some people think magpies are absolute bastards, loud, thieving, and full of attitude. They'll swoop at you, steal shiny things, and squawk like they own the place. Can I just say, I'm not comfortable with the way that AI is developing a sort of chummy tone.
Oh, it's becoming familiar. I've not used ChatGPT. Is it just because you're using it a lot?
Hey, does it emulate its user?
I don't know. It's learning off you, though, isn't it, in some way?
Farmers don't like them because they sometimes raid nests and eat eggs. The thing is, there's a whole category of thing which is farmers don't like them. And I don't think that you can't... That's
well,
not
that includes
quite,
hippies, doesn't it?
That exactly includes hippies,
peace
ramblers.
Yeah.
Lib Dem MPs.
Yeah.
Primary school teachers, probably.
Yeah. Helicopter pilots. balloonists. We know that. They don't like balloonists, do they?
Yeah.
So here... And AI is... So I'm just going to carry on here. But on the other hand, they're also clever little legends. This is like some sort of...
This
is like a guy you used to know at university, you're sort of embarrassed to run into on the tube. It's like, oh no, it's Rory. Oh God. Yo, Henry, little legend. Hey. Is that the personality that AI is developing? That's the real terror zone, isn't it? That global AI, all the machines link together in the world and become a kind of next-gen AI mega brain. And it's basically just a guy called Rory from
this
uni.
Sort of preppy frat boy.
Yeah. Bit of a knob.
They can recognize faces, solve puzzles, and even mimic human speech. In some cultures, they're seen as symbols of luck and intelligence. So magpies bastards? Yes, and also no. They're just chaotic little geniuses who do whatever they want.
No. They're not geniuses. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, that thing about mimicking human speech is true, because around here, if someone comes to the door selling something, you've got to be careful it's not just four magpies in a trench coat.
With a burlap bag full of fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Just pretending to be a Geordie fishmonger. Yeah. Think about it. It's basically Birdsong, isn't it, the Geordie accent? It's just it's a lovely way to wake up, isn't it?
Why? We've had an email from Ben. Ben has sent us an audio file, which is... the audio of his wife doing an impression of what the podcast sounds like to her.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Here we go.
Can I say, that's such a shame she didn't get around to doing me. Because that was great. Absolutely nailed you guys. Is there a longer version? Or let's, if you can send in a bit with me in it. Because that's really... Oh, wow. I'd be feeling... smarting. Anyone smart? Either of you guys smarting a bit there? That's quite... Oh. Was there a longer file? Was there a longer audio file? I didn't have time to play.
I think she's nailed it.
Yeah, it's pretty bang on.
This is an email we've got from Nell.
Hello, Nell. Love the name Nell.
This is a good name, isn't it? This is in response to our recent DIY episode.
Oh, yeah.
My parents were staying with us as it was my son's birthday.
Uh-huh.
Having spent a perfectly calm hour on a Zoom call, I came down to see how my mum was getting on decorating the cake. Mm-hmm. What I found was her watching out of the window and shouting, "They should call the fucking fire brigade, the fucking twats." Great start to an anecdote. My husband, brackets normally an excellent DIYer, and dad, had decided it'd be fun to try their hands at professional level tree surgery.
Ooh.
Now, this is going to bring back some flashbacks for Mike. They had got the chainsaw over halfway through what a tree surgeon had once described as the tallest leylandy in Lincolnshire, before the tree crunched ominously in the wrong direction and crushed the chainsaw.
Oh, that's the risk. You never know which way it's going to drop. That's the risk, but it's the whole... That's why tree surgery is such a high-stakes business, isn't it?
It was going to drop one of two ways. One, across the road and through a power line.
Oh, my God.
Or two, into what the tree surgeon also described as the tallest and oldest and most important witch elm in Lincolnshire.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
As some emergency tree surgeons appeared, with my dad now pruning roses to make it seem like he had nothing to do with it, and with my mother shouting behind me, this cake decorating is not going well, I put my headphones on and went for an angry walk. All the best, Nell.
Superb.
Bloody hell, Nell.
That's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel stressed. I mean, even though it's over and we know it's over and I didn't live it, I feel, that was stressful stuff.
Okay, let's think of a Viking pun.
Oh. Do you want to be given the horn twice?
Oh, God.
Talk us through it, Henry.
Well, you've got two options. Either put on a Viking helmet or listen to this next bit of chat.
I don't like it. I mean...
Really, it says an old random called Jack in it. Oh, yeah, sorry, and there's one called Jack in it as well. Does that make it better, mate?
Is it... This is beans, Henry. This isn't Owlfuckers.
No, you're right. Sorry. I sometimes I carry the tone of Owlfuckers into beans. Sorry.
Do you want to hear about some horny Scandinavians?
Yeah, that's exactly how we do it on Owlfuckers, yeah. No, that's quite good, actually. There's one Bjorn every minute.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, you've done it.
It certainly was in the 12th century or thereabouts. It's Vikings.
Great stuff. When I went to Kazakhstan, I went to a banya, like a Russian-style...
Yeah. That's what I was at. So tell me, you went to a sort of a real one then?
Yeah, right? So I had a... Yeah. I didn't have a massage. I had a scrub where they sort of scrubbed all the skin off your body and you were left like a sort of little pink
bleeding
afterwards. That was good.
Bleeding lump of meat, yeah.
But then afterwards, I went into the sort of banyary bit, the kind of saunery bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really like a sauna or a steam room. I thrive in that kind of place. Just love it. It's great. And I sat there, it was quite relaxing, you know, everyone's just sat there with a little felt hat on and you're naked, you're sat in a towel.
Yeah.
They give you a felt hat?
Yeah, so the felt hat is counterintuitive.
It is counterintuitive.
So as you go into a banya, the person at the desk hands you a felt hat, which looks like a tea cozy.
Okay, so it's not brimmed, a brimless felt hat, is it?
Not brimmed.
Yeah.
Imagine the Smurfs, Mike.
Okay,
it's a sort of Smurf hat. I'd say to pull off looking good in it is nigh impossible. I think Chalamet's
up to it, probably. But
Chalamet's up to it. There's not many. But when she handed me mine, I sort of smirked, and she must be so bored and used to this. But she went,
"Trust me,
really, because it does actually help."
What, with
weirdly.
What?
But I don't know if it.
I can't think what the reason would be.
Is it a sort of men? Is it like a sort of red herring? Is it like a joke? Is it like a trick or something to make you think? Or to...
I might be wrong, but I think it keeps your head cool so you can stay in there longer.
Mm.
So you want your body to warm up, but you don't want your head to warm up too much because you'll.
But generally, you wouldn't put on a sort of tea cozy on your head
to cool it down.
To cool it down, but I think it's to do with you have to start change the way you think about temperature. Temperature is a vibration in molecules.
isn't it? I think he's right.
Yeah. Well, I know sometimes science is funny. Not sometimes nature is funny. It is. Big Bang, for example, is quite funny, isn't it? Big Bang.
Are you saying felt doesn't vibrate?
Felt doesn't vibrate. That's why snooker tables are made of it.
Okay. Because everything has to be perfectly still.
Everything has to be perfectly still. So if you put on a jumper, it doesn't actually, or if you put tikos on your head, or let's say you put on a woolen hat, that doesn't keep you warm. It stops molecules move. So it stops the movement of molecules from permeating left and right between your head and the outside world. So it conserves molecule vibration. So if you're going into a place where it's even hotter than a hot head would normally be, then if you just...
You're basically putting a hat on the sauna.
essentially you're putting a hat on the sauna. You're to stop the heat.
You're preventing
in.
Your head from getting to room temperature. Is that what you're saying? You're preventing it from adjusting to,
yeah,
to a hot room temperature.
Yeah, sort of. It's about conserving. Basically, if it's hotter outside than it is inside, you might as well. But then in that case, you should be wearing like ski gloves and like a sort of woolly jumper, and, like a sleeping bag when you go into a hot place.
But all on your head.
You know what? There's a few.
There's some wrinkles to iron out. Sure.
There's some wrinkles to iron out. But
anyway, you get a felt hat, and yeah, I'm not entirely sure why. You pop it on. It was really relaxing. It was really nice. I was really enjoying myself. It was very, very aggressively masculine in there.
Right.
Like everyone's quite blokey. And then the door swings open, and like one of the biggest men I've ever seen stomps in. He was probably like 6'8" or something.
Right.
Very, very heavy set. And he kind of lollops in.
Yeah.
Goes up some stairs, because it was like a two-story sauna. If you went upstairs, it was hotter.
Yeah.
Walked up the stairs, and without saying a word, just put his hands on this kind of handrail, bent forward, and then five other men who had just been sitting there up until this moment sprang up and started beating him with twigs. And then he's just going, oh, 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 oh.
And can I say, a lot of the time, you know, men are portrayed as simplistic, but actually we're very emotional, very sensitive beings, and actually people should understand that. But if a man is big enough, the other men will treat him as a percussive instrument and whack him with sticks, and that man will gratefully then sort of wail. Won't he?
He gave off such boss energy.
Yeah.
That I think the other men just felt compelled to start beating him with the birch rods and the leaves.
Wow. So that put you in a bit of an awkward position. What did you do?
You probably haven't earned the right to. You probably had the urge to beat him with a birch rod as well, but haven't earned the right yet.
No.
Because those guys, I mean, they're up in the elevated section already, right? You've got to earn that.
Yeah. If I wanted to get on that treadmill, I need to start by washing his feet, probably.
Your entry level would probably be as birch rod, I'm going to say. Yeah.
But it was like those. It was like a little bushel.
Yeah, okay.
Of twigs and leaves.
Yeah, I saw this in the banyo I went to a couple of weeks ago. It's like a human-sized bouquet garni.
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't it? It's like a bunch of sort of wet herbs.
Yeah.
Really big wet herbs.
But it was the noises that got me. I thought that we would, maybe because I'm British, I thought they would stoically just take it. But it was very much like, hoo!
But then maybe that's part of the catharsis. Maybe that's what, you need that bit.
Yeah.
Did you see his back afterwards? What sort of state it was in? Did it look flayed?
No. I don't think so.
No. So these guys have got it just right.
It probably would have been punctured with little bits of garlic, because sometimes they puncture it through little bits of garlic.
Yeah. Cloves.
Push some herbs under the skin.
A little bit of honey glaze on the top.
A bit of a honey glaze.
Yeah.
But also, like, what was this guy doing outside of the sauna? Like, he gave off the vibe of maybe you're watching a film set in ancient Troy, and then, like, at the end of the battle, he comes out and everyone goes, oh, shit! Do you know what I mean? Like Goliath style.
Yeah. He's the army champion.
Exactly.
If it's going to be one-on-one, it's this
guy. Actually soft as a puppy around his grandchildren. Crawling all over him. Yeah, on a sort of Sunday barbecue. Pretty quite.
I'd love to know who he is.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've not experienced a proper banyo. I'd be up for it.
I didn't realise you could have that experience in London.
Yeah. Then there's a couple.
Or was it just you and loads of heavily sanctioned Russian businessmen?
I wish I could say that. Do you know what it was? It was me. Because this one is in East London. It was me. And I'm going to say a load of quite pretentious sort of East London. I'm not including myself. Hang on a second. Oh, God. I've entered the kaleidoscope of truth. I can see myself reflected in there. No, it was just sort of like East London advertising types.
Yeah.
So like guys who are like working creative agencies.
Yeah.
And it was quite a good moment. So I sat in the hot bit and there were these two guys who came in and they were like talking about, yeah, so anyway, I've got the, I'm trying to get this Shreddies account, but I've got wheel a deal, and I'll Derek from, cheap from the cheese division, he's trying to muscle in on our territory, but like, it's a different marketing strategy, breakfast cereals and cheese. They're like,
Wensleydale.
Be careful, because these people could be identifiable from that.
Yeah.
Good. They could.
Presumably that's verbatim. Yeah.
I told him, Derek, you cannot make Wensleydale sexy. It can't happen.
This is a hot young East London sort of media creative called Derek.
Yeah.
He's the go-to guy for cheese, Mark.
If forget, scrub that impression from your minds. Sort of two sort of marketing-y type, sort of cool inverted commas guys were sort of, and they were just going banging on and on and on about their work and some issue to do with their work.
Yeah.
And I was just sat there, and then there was this. I think Russian lady was sort of lying down with a felt hat on her head, and she suddenly took the felt hat off and went,
"We are trying to relax."
And, nice.
It was a great moment.
Yeah, that's
nice.
Brilliant.
They weren't properly engaging with the traditional banya.
And I actually put up my hand to give her a high five, and she went, "I include you, dipshit."
You only get one warning with a person like that.
You get one
three strikes. This ain't a baseball nation.
Now stick a bay leaf up your ass and fuck off.
Yeah, but the bit I don't get involved in is the cold plunge.
Oh no!
See, I think that's a bit I quite like.
Oh, that's extreme.
Plunge. Mike, I run hot. I don't find steam rooms and saunas appealing. I've never found them relaxing, or I found them highly unpleasant.
Do you run hot?
Yeah.
So do you do cold water swim stuff?
No, not as a thing. But
see, Mike, this is provincial dad bullshit. I'm calling it. Play the jingle.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hidden my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday, I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
You can't say,
yeah.
It's not allowed, yeah. Certainly on my watch,
yeah.
For someone to say, yeah, I'd actually be into the cold plunging if you're not actually into it. Because anyone can say I'd be into her cold plunging.
Yeah.
And it's like me saying I'd read War and Peace, yeah.
I'd be into Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be brilliant at Everest, especially the last section between Base Camp 7 and the peak, where I'd really come into my own, probably rescue a few people.
And my team losing my corpse.
Yeah. So put your money where your mouth is, mate.
Well, I'd
go to the kitchen, get an ice. We're doing a live ice bucket challenge. It's happening. A live was plunge.
It'll sort out your lumbago.
I didn't think I'd be into the full Wim Hof thing. Maybe I like a cool plunge. Like I like plunging myself in cool waters.
Tepid? Cool. Okay, so we've already gone from cold to cool.
Yeah. Refreshing. But I've never liked saunas or steam rooms or stuff. I yearn to plunge my body into a cool body of water.
Well, you're supposed to go from one extreme to the other, but I, like Ben, I cut out the cold bit, which I feel a bit embarrassed about. Do you not feel a bit embarrassed about that? But I act confused. Like, am I supposed to turn left here? Oh, okay. And just disappear into the changing room. Don't do that bit, essentially.
I sort of have a shower.
Yeah.
But then I don't make it quite as cold as he meant to do. But then even then I'm kind of going like, no, sorry, I don't like it.
I went to a spa once for a massage and a hot room thing. There was various cold plunge pools available, none of which I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the easiest one I could do that kind of saved a bit of face was this thing where you go into a little room, you press a button, it kind of sprays you with cold mist.
Right.
Which I could just about take. But while at the same time playing you the sounds of the jungle.
Ooh.
Really weird moment.
That's very good.
It was like
we also had an email from Chris from Sydney, who told us about a child. Oh no, this happened to his wife when she was 7. She discovered a full-size live koi carp flopping around in their garden with talon marks on its back.
Oh, there we go. Telltale stuff. What happened to the koi carp?
They kept it. Her mum put it in a plastic kiddie pool and kept it as a pet for some time afterwards.
Nice. Wow. I mean, the chances of that, once that koi carp got plucked out of the sea.
Or a pond.
Or a pond. By that eagle or whatever. The chances of it living to tell the tale. I mean, that koi carp must have thought, like, this is curtains. I've had a good life. I was spawned. I fed on
mucus?
Pond mucus. And this is it. But to survive that, that's incredible. It's quite merciless, isn't it? I mean, that is quite bird. There's something just quite. It's quite grim, isn't it? That birds take things up into the sky, drop them, some crack them open, and then come down and eat them. It's quite grim, isn't it, nature?
Just a reminder that the natural world is just red and tooth and claw, horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolute state of chaos.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's certainly not one of the bits in an Attenborough documentary where they would put on the strings which tell you that this is going to be a slightly funny bit.
The pizzicato strings.
These crabs are actually flirting with each other.
There's no triangle in this bit, is there?
No. This is a version of crab behaviour that's a bit like taking your girlfriend out for a drink.
But this drink is mucus.
Yeah, no, this is French horns and snare drums, isn't it?
Yeah. Or maybe they could try and make it fun. This eagle's taking this little tortoise.
This hapless tortoise.
This hapless tortoise on the journey of a lifetime. Dum, 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 dum. Ooh, be careful, better not drop him. I don't think a tortoise has ever been flying before. Are they going to join the Mile High Club?
Oh, look, the tortoises are each terminal velocity. That's a new one, isn't it?
Oh, it's still sort of alive while it's in its being eaten.
God. Okay, that's Extra Beans. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for your support.
Thank you very much indeed.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.